The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
Sure does.
It does. It totally settles in your soul.
Yes, sir, Bob.
This is Terry Raposa and Wynn Carpenter. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well, and you?
Good. And Liam, our producer, how are you, pal?
I'm doing just dandy.
And our third host on this program is our good friend, Eric Jensen. How are you, buddy?
Oh, doing great. Good morning.
Good. We're broadcasting live from KCNR Studios, downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, in 1460 AM, your talk radio.
In the belly of the beast.
In the belly of the beast. And you can listen live at KCNR1460.com, and this program is podcasted worldwide and archived forever.
And ever.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
At KCNR1460.com. Anyway, if you have a phone, if you want to phone in and you have a question or a comment, 530-605-4567. Well, we were in touch with a gentleman named Seth Kachel, and he's a former Army captain of the military intelligence and Afghan veteran, and he is also an election data expert. We had a little trouble with communication this week, but I'm sure in the next week or so we will be having him on. We do have some information that we wanted to get to, though, however, this morning, and that is, where are we now in this election? Now, on July the 12th, Kathy Darling Allen was supposed to wrap things up with the Board of Supervisors, but now we hear that she's not going to be at that meeting, and things have changed. So we brought in Eric Jensen to bring us up to date on exactly what is going on in Shasta County. There has been many anomalies, and we're going to let Eric take that away and explain some of those things to us. So go ahead, brother.
All right. This was a very interesting election. I have pointed out that the results of the June 2022 primary were historically, statistically, and politically anomalous. In other words, they were very weird. Now, that does not mean that there was the F word. There was fraud.
Can I say
it? Yes, you can say it.
Yeah, because we're not accusing anyone of this. It's just the F word is fraud. That's we know it's something different for you people in Rio Lindo. So the F word is fraud. Yes.
Right. So, but it's weird, and there are lots of. We can go through what each one of those anomalies. I mean, we probably don't have time to go through each of the anomalies, but suffice to say, there was a phenomena on election night that was shocking. We had essentially. If you go back to Election Day, the first batch of ballots that was released by the Registrar of Voters, led by Kathy Allen, one of the candidates for county clerk, the first batch of ballots that were released, there was about 20,000 of them, and they were all in favor of the incumbents. And the person that fared the best was Miss Allen, the vote counter herself. Now, that was interesting, but, anything's possible. They don't take polls on these elections, so nobody really knows. You can base it upon some public perception and, feedback you get. But what was interesting was that we received on election day some results directly from the machines at the polling places throughout the various precincts in Shasta County.
And did you get it from all precincts? Or
we eventually did, yes.
Okay.
And that data that was not touched or processed by our local ROV produced wildly different results. And when I say wildly, we're talking about, in most of the races, a difference of about 30%.
Wow.
Okay. So where you had, for instance, Bob Holsinger in the early tallies only garnering 20% of the vote. And you're talking, this is a guy endorsed by the local Republican Central Committee running against a D.C. Democrat who endorsed Dominion voting machines and doesn't support voter ID. I mean, that is...
unbelievable.
It is very strange.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
in a red county, supposedly. Yeah.
Right. And so that's where he was on the early voting. But what we saw on election night was that he was at the machines actually winning. He was getting 54.82% of the vote. That is a swing of, like I said, that's actually a swing of 34%. I mean, that is unprecedented. And I was curious because, I wanted to make sure that it was unprecedented. But let me go through some of the other numbers, too, because I think those are interesting. And in my race, I was down in the early votes. I only got 35% win rate, which is abysmal. But from the machines that we gathered, I was actually getting 65%.
Wow.
Exactly the opposite. And those results were similar for the other countywide candidates in the race for school superintendent and also the race for sheriff. Now, so you can say, well, maybe the early voters are liberal activists, but that doesn't really jive because they also exhibited preference for a number of the Republican candidates. So then there was a...
For state office.
State, Senate, et cetera.
They're going to vote for state offices, they're going to vote red, but then for local county office, they're going to vote blue.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, it was just a very strange...
interesting.
Result. So then there was this big debate in the community for those of us that were watching the election closely as to how the rest of the tallies would unfold. And then that's where it got interesting.
Eric, we do have Seth on the phone. Seth Cashel, how are you, sir?
Cashel here. How are you?
Doing well. Glad you could make it. I know you're really busy. Appreciate it. If you could tell the folks a little bit about yourself, and then we'd like to get into some things. You did a great job on last Friday night. It was great information. Thank you for all you do, brother. It's been amazing how you've... do you ever sleep? That's my question.
I do not sleep. I wait. I am somebody that runs on energy. I actually don't do so well during holidays and downtimes because I like to go. I like to move. I'm tired of people that send up empty prayers without action. And I think that the only way we're going to get the country back is by bold action and having faith that we can act and have confidence that God can have our back.
Yes, sir.
So with California in particular, you know, I was out there a few days last week, and I'm going to be out there again in August for about 5 days, 4th through the 8th. But I'm a former Army intelligence officer. I was a captain. I served a tour in Afghanistan. I did 6 years in service. And I took that skill set into a hobby, which was political forecasting. And in 2016, I called all 50 states correctly, against the grain, against all the polling, against all the talking heads, because I used traditional data that is used to forecast election outcomes. Voter registration by party, voter behavior, population change, and trends. Those are the actual barometers of what an election is going to do. So I was able to predict the 2016 election accurately. And in 2020, I prepared the same findings. And my findings showed me that President Trump would carry the Electoral College with the same map that he had in 2016 with the addition, at minimum, of Minnesota, Nevada, and New Hampshire. And that was at minimum. And now my numbers show, looking back, that 326 was exactly the minimum you would have had. That exact map is 390 or so is the likely maximum that he would have had, which would have required several blue states falling to him, which are likely. So I was recognized by the president in August of last year twice, once in a written statement and another time at a rally in Coleman, Alabama. So he is familiar with my work. My work is very fundamental in understanding the basics of elections and really portraying the story of the 2020 election to average everyday people who are not numbers wizards.
Well, you know, I thought that your presentation in Reading was remarkable. I love the fact that when we have speakers, a lot of times you hear a lot of platitudes. You hear people saying this is what's wrong, and did you know this was wrong, and this is bad, it's really bad, did I say it was bad? Yet you came up with 10 points that I think were fantastic on how we can fix this mess, and maybe we can briefly go through them. As I emailed you, we're not going to take a break here. We want to hear what you have to say. We have a few questions, but you had 10 points, and I remember your first point was clean out the voter rolls. Can you elaborate on each one of those points?
Sure. Cleaning out the voter rolls is the foundation of what we have to get done to fix our elections. That is the fundamental foundation of a clean election or a fraudulent election. Just like keeping your eye on the ball to catch a pass or keeping your glove on the ground to catch a ground ball, that is the first task. California's voter rolls are inflated as well. Now, this is why you see blue states that are pushing mail-in balloting. They also push automatic voter registration programs like Motor Voter, because the natural tendency of politics is to shift away from the party that is in power over time, because eventually they wear out their welcome. Their agenda gets a little bit overbearing, and sometimes if their majorities are too large, does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get outright tyranny. So in a clean election system, the voters check tyranny by voting out parties that are overstaying their welcome. So if you know that's happening and you want to go to a mail-in ballot system, a mail-in ballot election, then you also need to create fraudulent voter rolls to give yourself a credit line of new voters in which to so-called request absentee ballots. Or you can field absentee ballots to them via electronic means, as Eric is probably aware of. So cleaning out the voter rolls, you can look at that with any canvassing results in Wisconsin. You can see horrible things on the slides that I present. You have apartments with 16 to 23 registered voters per unit that have never been, the rolls have never been cleaned out to reflect an accurate count. Assisted living centers and nursing homes with a 2-to-1 registration to bed ratio. We see all kinds of issues with voter registration. You can even go into housing areas and go into a subdivision and you'll find a husband and wife that live together and they're registered to vote. They both voted, and then there's someone else in the house who's registered to vote that voted that doesn't live there, or they've moved a long time ago, or they don't exist at all. We call those phantom voters. So in order to even get to the precipice of having fair elections, we're going to have the voter rolls basically dumped. Really, any county with a population underneath perhaps 50,000 ought to dump the entire voter roll and have everyone re-register.
Yeah, I know.
That's the first.
You know, one of the things that you did say that I thought was interesting was that in some of these apartment complexes, there's like, 200, 400 people that would be voting in these apartment complexes when there's like 30 people living there. And that may not be statistically correct, but it was pretty interesting. You did have a good point about the nursing homes. I think you said that there was twice as many voters there than there was beds.
Yeah, that's the case of fraud that was in the cases of fraud, I should say, that were in Racine County in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So Sheriff Schmeling of Racine County, he's one of just a few sheriffs who were willing to jump into this issue. Now, it looks like Sheriff Johnson of Shasta County is interested in it, but Sheriff Leaf of Berry County, Michigan, and a couple others, they are enthused about going after the election fraud issue, but that sheriff of Racine County made a case of it, recommended charges be filed by the DA to deal with the election fraud found in nursing homes there.
Now, you were also talking, number two, you were talking about getting away from these machines.
Number two is to ban all electronic elections equipment.
Yep.
That is not a pipe dream. They absolutely have the ability with machines to manipulate elections. I don't know if that is the same everywhere. I don't know if algorithms are applied everywhere, because I can also find elections in 2020. Now, keep in mind, I'm analyzing the presidential election, because that is the one that is most predictable based on trends. And another reason that it's important to deal with the small cases of fraud is because local races are decided by much tighter margins of votes. You can have local races that are, 5-10% apart, but the margin is only a couple hundred votes. So the electronic equipment, there's a number of studies out there. You have Antrim County in Michigan, the DiPerno team study based on the November 3rd actions there in Antrim County. Then you have Mesa County, Colorado. That is the work of Mike Lindell's team, Jeff O'Donnell, the Lone Raccoon. And you also have Otero County in New Mexico. Lots of studies about machines there and their ability to basically turn out voters remotely that are on these electronic voting rolls. They can turn out and cast ballots for voters who actually don't show up to vote, which is probably what happened in the primaries in Shasta County.
Yeah, that sounds that sounds about right. Now, you also mentioned that voter ID and paper ballots only. I think that that's something a lot of people want. I know a lot of conservatives want that. Can you elaborate on that one?
It's not just conservatives that want voter ID. Voter ID has popular support from just about everyone, especially independents.
Good.
If you get into the heavy minority communities and you start asking people if they have an ID, every one of them has an ID.
Mm-hmm.
And if you even mention that Democrats think they're too stupid to get an ID, then you really get a reaction. Because IDs are part of life. If I go to buy a gun, I've got to show an ID. If I go to the airport, I'm showing an ID. If I get pulled over by a state trooper, I'm showing an ID.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm checking into a hotel, renting a car, I have to show an ID. So IDs are part of life. Anyone that wants to withhold ID from an election is trying to defraud the election.
Now, in mail-in ballots, I know that you have a stand on that. You also had mentioned there has to be a few things, like, of course, the military. They, you know, if they're overseas, they've got to mail them in. But can you elaborate on that one?
So imagine a political party that has entrenched itself in a state like California
mm-hmm.
or Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You could even say the same thing. Let's just say we're talking about Wyoming. And let's say the Republicans have entrenched themselves in Wyoming. And they put in an election system that says, you send us your picks, and our people will make sure that we count your vote right. So we will remove ourselves from power by taking your vote out of the sight of anyone else and having our people and our machines count your vote.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get knocked out of power, we get knocked out of power. And imagine that anybody would say that sincerely. That's basically what mail-in voting is. Mail-in voting is completely taking away any sort of transparency from elections.
Mm-hmm.
It allows for ballot mules to go about and retrieve these extra mail-in ballots that don't have anybody to receive them because the voter was never real in the first place. That's Wisconsin. That's also what the ruling was in Wisconsin the other day about the drop boxes. It pretty much cripples their muling operation. So mail-in ballots are a thing about convenience, and they are absolutely banned. They're banned in a number of countries. They're absolutely a way to corrupt elections. Jimmy Carter said that 15 years ago. So this was not conspiracy talk. This is fact.
Now, you were talking about also number five was banning early voting. there's a lot of people who would agree with that one. Do you want to elaborate, my friend?
Yeah. So, by the way, on mail-in ballots, there are some exceptions. I still get
yes.
conservative people that don't understand why to ban mail-in ballots because they're not understanding how much fraud is perpetrated with mail-in ballots because the voter rolls are fraudulent. And the early voting, and there's restrictions on mail-in balloting. It's not an outright ban. We can allow it for overseas military. We can allow it for people that are disabled with a notary. But the early voting is another issue. We have in some states, Virginia and Minnesota come to mind, where early voting is going on for 45 days leading up to a presidential election.
Hmm.
And then we get into the issue in like Texas, where we have 3 weeks of early voting in the
right.
last election.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats organized drive-through voting lanes to take advantage of the lax protocols surrounding COVID. So it's too dangerous to get out to vote. So here's 10 IDs, pass me 10 ballots into my car. That's
yep.
happening. Drive-through voting lanes. So early voting is a way also with the use of electronic equipment for corrupt elections officials to monitor what the score of an election is. They only say they don't count the votes until election day, but the government is also responsible for shutting down the country over something that pretty much amounts to a cold.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. The government's telling you they won't count your vote until election day, but we
wow.
have to take them to work for that. I find that hard to do.
Yeah, you were also talking about getting smaller precincts, and I think you mentioned 1,200 or fewer. I think that's a great idea.
Yep, the precincts in many places are too large. So precinct committee leaders, which California has a mess in terms of precinct-level organization, but precinct committeemen are essential to overseeing elections activities, overseeing the quality and accuracy of a voter roll, and then doing select canvassing at the end of an election to guarantee accuracy. And when precincts are too large, let's say we have 10,000 registered voters in a precinct, which is the case in places like Houston or Phoenix, then there's no way to keep up with the voter rolls and all the changes that happen. So it's easy to lose, especially with the use of electronics. It's easy to lose a couple hundred ballots that don't belong and they wind up in the county.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller precincts also is essential if we're going to get towards one day, one vote, which is one of my points as you get towards the end. So smaller precincts are important, but it's going to require a lot more people to step up and work. We already don't have enough people, so imagine if we have 5 to 6 times more precincts.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, you're also talking about banning ballot harvesting. That might be a tough one here, but can you elaborate on that one?
Yeah, California gave birth to ballot harvesting, and they've exported their tactics and procedures to the rest of the country. Ballot harvesting is the secret sauce of generating mail-in voting turnout, especially for candidates like Joe Biden who don't even campaign. So Joe Biden outperformed Barack Obama not only in California but in Hawaii too, while Trump has record Republican gains in both and loses the states worse than he did in 2016. Washington is the same. Oregon is the same. I look at the numbers in Washington, Oregon, and Hawaii, and I honestly think that Trump could have won all three in 2020.
Hey, Seth, quick question on that. With ballot harvesting, is it legal to receive cash payment or any kind of payment for gathering ballots in California? Do you know that?
I don't know about California, but it doesn't sound like it would be.
Okay. So if they made it legal, it has to be on done by the Assembly and the Senate of California.
Yes.
So therefore, if it's legal and it's on the books, it's going to have to be legal for payment received as well, if that's the case, correct?
I would check the laws in California, but it sounds like straight-up election corruption if you're being paid to impact any outcomes of an election.
Okay, and then...
That doesn't matter what party it's for, but I don't know your laws.
Now, what's the jurisdiction for the size of the precincts, state or local? Do you know?
It sounds like the counties are the ones that typically redraw precincts.
Because it comes down to the agency closest to the people, correct? The county versus the state, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You know, you were talking about Election Day being a holiday. I think that's a great point. And, you know, a lot of people that do work and it's hard for them to get to work, you know, to come from work or whatever the case may be. But I think Election Day being a holiday, we can get back to that one day of voting that we used to have. What are your thoughts on that?
To me, it should be non-negotiable because our Constitution specifies Election Day. And we have holidays for all kinds of stuff. But what we've done is we've allowed loophole after loophole after loophole to turn elections to turn the presidential election into a month and a half long fiasco. And it's not just the days leading up to the election. It's the days after the election. So we have Election Day, and then sometimes our elections go on. In California, they're counting votes until Christmas. So we have to get away from that. And it's not so much about convenience for people to have a day off work. It's about limiting the loopholes and the cheat procedures that they have to defraud elections, because that Election Day as a holiday would be stupid to have if we don't restrict mail-in balloting and early voting as I prescribed.
Well, now, how about like the hanging chads in Florida? You know, how were those machines used on there as capable of, I guess, defrauding the public? You know, because that was back in what, I don't know, in the 90s, was that? Yeah, it was the 90s when that happened. So how is that going to be any different if we did paper ballots here? We're still going to have some kind of mechanism to run them through the system to do the accurate counting, correct?
Well, if we have precincts of 1,200 or smaller,
right,
then we can hand count the ballots. So if you think about Nebraska yesterday, did you see the news out of Nebraska?
No.
The Nebraska GOP had their state convention.
Okay.
And they started the convention off by threatening pretty much any insurgent outsider, like you, Eric, threatening anyone who had negative things to say about party leadership or election fraud or anything controversial. And they were trying to have people arrested for opposing the party.
That bodes well.
What happened was they wound up having all the RINO leadership fired, and the state chair lost his job, and they nominated a conservative for the state chair, and he accepted. And they also talked to a guy named Bob Borer, who ran for Secretary of State, he talked about election fraud statistics that I put out in three counties there. So they voted the state chair out on paper ballots, which is kind of funny to me.
A little bit of irony there, isn't there?
Yeah, you also talked about new reporting requirements and for transparency. And I'd like you to elaborate a little bit on that, if you would.
We cannot continue to have the largest counties in the state wait for days and weeks just on the basis of, well, we're very large, so we have a lot more votes to count. Well, there's also this thing called proportionality. So if you have 10,000 people and 10 election workers can get the results in by the end of the night, if you have 100,000 people, then you should have 100 people and be able to get the election results in by the end of the night, too. So they use that population thing as an excuse to wait and see how the conservative counties are going to vote and then get enough votes out of all of them together. There's no mistake. There's no irony in the fact that Philadelphia is reporting its votes in 3 days and the rest of the state is done.
See, that's kind of funny. It goes back to lack of representation and dilution of vote, because the numbers are so great there that the representatives can't adequately represent them because their numbers are too high. So like in California, our senators have 1 million people to represent, each senator. And then our assembly members, they have 500,000. So you look at that anomaly, or not anomaly, but the way they set that up, it just trickles down to the voting component as well, because there are too many. And like you said, there are too many voters to be counted in a timely fashion. So if they broke them up in smaller precincts or however they need to do that, whatever the system needs to be, however the system needs to be modified or adjusted to be fair and balanced for all voters, that needs to happen. That is partnered in and shadowed by the same thing that we have with our representatives. Exactly the same thing.
Yep, I agree with that.
You know, in 1862, the state of California capped the assembly at 80, and they capped the Senate at 40. So there was 120 representatives, and at the time there was 417,000 people. So when we fast forward to 2022, we have 40 million people in California, and we still only have 80 assemblymen and 40 senators. The other part about that is the fact that, which it tremendously decreases your, you know, the effectiveness of your vote and everything else. But the crazy part about that is really, in fact, that we had 55 judges in 1862. Now we've got 2,500, and people are wondering why the judicial system is running things in this state and, frankly, in this country.
And they're not doing it well, either.
And they're not doing it well. And that leads us into number 10, which I really loved, Seth, and that is heavy prison sentences for those who commit fraud.
Amen.
Amen to that. That's a simple one.
It
doesn't even need an explanation.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Seth, this is Eric,
yeah.
Really appreciate the work that you've done, and really I'm a lover of data too, so I appreciate the way that you parsed out the data historically over the years. I think it tells a story. And one of the things that I noticed in my investigation into this election, because I had a vested interest, was that the deeper you dig, the more concerning information you find, and you also find that it is conflated and that it is categorized, at least in our county, in a way that almost prevents good analysis. They don't want you to see the patterns. And one of the things that I noticed was that in our county, you mentioned how the early vote has been so influential in recent elections. And in our county this last election, it was roughly 40% of the total vote was in early ballots. But what's interesting is they don't characterize them that way on their official report. In fact, if you look at their official report, there's only 2,000 early votes, and that is not true. Most of those things that they have characterized as early votes were on Election Day. And they characterize the mail-in ballots prior to Election Day as simply vote by mail. And that really obscures the impact that early vote has. And I can't think of any good reason to do that other than to obscure that fact.
No, I can't think so either. You know that they do everything they can to make everything less transparent and just trust us. meanwhile, they're not trustworthy in any way.
Yeah, and, it, and in some ways it's worse than that because it has the appearance of transparency because they're giving you categories. What you don't realize is that those categories are wrong. And the other category that I noticed that they had really conflated was that vote-by-mail category. So if you go look at our official results, you'll see that almost all of the ballots were vote-by-mail. And there was another category for Election Day, and Election Day votes were only about 5,000. What they did was is that they took drop-offs at the polling places on Election Day, and they characterized them as vote-by-mail, even though they never touched the mail service at all. What do you suppose could be the purpose of that, Seth?
That people won't mess with the mail-in balloting system?
Yeah.
Wow.
What is the question?
Well, what they did was they took the drop-offs on Election Day at the various polling places where people just hand-delivered them to the polling workers, and they counted those as vote-by-mail. So if you look at the official tally, almost all of the votes here in Shasta County were vote-by-mail. So they're combining the early votes by mail with the Election Day drop-offs and calling them all vote-by-mail.
Wow.
They just run everything together to make it harder to figure out. Arizona has the same problem where they don't distinguish by in-person early vote and early vote by mail.
That's amazing.
It's just another way to It's another way to push votes together to where you can't find them. I see it sometimes with the way precinct level, where the way precinct.
I think we lost you there for a minute, brother. Can you repeat that? Would you mind?
Yeah, they push together precinct results as well. They redraw precincts and squash all the numbers together where you can't separate where they all came from. So really, one of the problems of our election system is elections are extremely inauditable. You can't really even retrieve ballots.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a million-dollar question. So mm-hmm. does Arizona, are their ballots identical? I mean, in other words, you and I are both citizens of Arizona, are our ballots identical? No number differentiation on them or identifier on them.
Yeah, well, in Texas, we don't have that either. It's state law that we're supposed to have serialized ballots, and a number of the large counties have done away with that. So the machines assign identifying characteristics to the ballots, but you can't pull your own ballot and see how it's marked.
Right. And that's, to me, that's sickening because then all they're doing, they're taking all that away from you electronically every way they can. Because if Terry has a ballot and he's number, 5,000, and I have a ballot and I'm number 6,000, Eric has a ballot, he's number 4,000, all three of them thrown into a pile, we can't identify which one's ours individually. We can't figure that out because there's no identifying number or lettering component on there to say which one belongs to each one of us. And that's wrong. That's wrong on every level.
It's to protect your privacy. That's what they always say. I notice that in all of the...
I call BS on that.
Yeah, it's total BS. I mean, they have some of these machines, the image cast evolution machine of Dominion, which we use here in this county, has the ability to produce ballots. And what I found disturbing, I was watching a video not long ago where they showed that this was a feature of the Dominion system, that it could create marks on the ballots that resembled human marks, that they had irregularities.
Wow.
And the purpose of that, the pretext, was that it was to protect the identity of handicapped people who would need to use the system so that you couldn't tell that a handicapped person cast that ballot.
So they're using that
to
get around the issue and to get support on that so they can continue to monopolize it illegally.
And so that it could evade detection by the human eye.
Yeah.
Like that you couldn't tell that it was a manufactured ballot by the machine. You'd say, oh, it was just a person did this. It would take some sort of forensic audit to determine whether, in fact, it was done by a human or a machine.
No, that's what I want, forensic
audit
all the way.
Yeah, we need to have that. That's the only one that holds up in court.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can use number 10.
So we can use number 10, exactly.
We want to use number 10, brother.
So, Seth, one of the things that people were saying in this county, because, we got the results directly from the machines on election night, and I think that was something that wasn't anticipated by our county clerk. when those results were beginning to be published online, there appeared to be panic in the county clerk's office because the results were so different from what she produced. And, you know, as people were producing these tapes and showing the wildly different numbers, there was an explanation that was being floated around as to why they would be so different. And they talked about, I think it was called a red mirage. That's what it was. They were saying that basically people who put their ballots into the machines on election day were really, really weird, and that nobody else was like that. What do you think about that, Seth?
You broke out.
Yeah. So the can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. So the explanation that was given by our county clerk for why the results that were gathered from the machines on election day, why they were so different, was something called a red mirage, that only very weird people, I guess conservative weird people, put their ballots directly into the machines on election day.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a mail-in voting Republican. That is all media nonsense. They made it up for the COVID pandemic, and you can see articles in the summer of 2020 from Bloomberg News that show a red mirage scenario where they show day one of the election, here's the score, and it's got all the states that Trump was winning big on election night in red, including a few others. And then it shows what it'll look like as the red wave recedes on day two, day three, day four. They pretty much called their shot because they knew how they were going to play the election, so they put their play out there early so people could look for it. It's the same thing you see when you have information operations showing a blue Texas and a blue Georgia 5-10 years out, and then they finally make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's a predictive programming, if you will. But, you know, it's interesting. I looked at historic data just to see if that theory held water. And even in the election of Donald Trump in 2020 in our county, the difference between election day votes and the subsequently tallied ballots was less than 6%. And in our case, in this most recent election here in Shasta County, in the primaries, we saw a 15% reduction in percentages for the county candidates. In one case, in Bob Holsinger's case, the guy running against the county clerk, he got 20% less in the subsequently tallied ballots. I mean, it was a historically anachronistic result. It had never happened before.
And he's the Republican running against the Democrat, the sitting ROV.
Who's counting the votes.
Who's counting the votes,
yeah.
In a red county, supposedly.
Right. That went 65% Trump.
Yeah.
In 2020.
Exactly. How does that work?
So you've seen some of the election data from the 2022 primary here in Shasta County. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the law of big numbers. You're not gonna be pulling in 63% of the election day vote likely and being edged out in early votes like that.
Is that an anomaly or once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, or what do you think that is?
Well, we can't use the F word.
Go ahead.
You showed me your spreadsheet. You have a number of formulas that seem to come in very evenly and very consistently.
Yeah, the county candidates, the incumbents all fared well, and the challengers fared poorly on the early votes and the subsequently tallied votes. Basically everything processed by the registrar of voters.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, you know it.
It's not consistent. Guys, I've got to jump.
All right, buddy. Well, anyway, we don't use the F word, the fraud word here for anything.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
We don't use that word. And Seth, bless you for all you're doing,
brother.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you for all you do. And again, have a wonderful day. God bless you, and take care, my friend.
Thank you, Seth.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do you want to go back to the anomalies that you were talking about, Eric, in the beginning?
Well, there's just so many of them. I mean, and here's the thing. Like I said, if you have to break it down, it's broken down into three categories.
Okay.
You have statistical anomalies, which really are difficult to convey over the radio waves.
Right.
I mean, you need somebody to sit down and look at them.
Exactly.
And they are numerous.
Yeah.
And that is probably the biggest obstacle that we have in conveying this information to the public.
Okay.
We have a local press who doesn't care.
Right.
They're probably unaware, as I would wager almost everybody in the public is unaware of how statistically anomalous this election was. So, I've got people telling me that I should go to the Board of Supervisors and explain this. 3 minutes is not sufficient to explain the type of data that we're talking about here.
Right.
So you have statistical anomalies. And I guess the easiest way to say it or to boil that down, even though there are many, I mean, there are some weird patterns that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get into that. It's just too complicated to explain. But suffice to say that the results on Election Day were wildly different from the rest of the results published by the Registrar of Voters Office. And when I say wildly different, I mean that we're talking about a variance of, in the case of Bob Holsinger, 33.8%.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, that is absolutely crazy. And
yeah.
It's in favor of a Democrat. So that leads me to the politically anomalous nature of this race. And I think that's something that we can convey effectively over the radio. You had four races, okay? Now, and I guess you have to go back to the campaigning and appreciate that there were essentially two slates of candidates. There was the incumbent slate that ran on, Shasta Votes supported them, that pack, and they ran on this idea of qualified. They were the most qualified people. Well, you know, the incumbent is always the most qualified. That's the way that it works. So that's code for incumbent. So, they ran together. That included Kathy Darling Allen, the vote counter.
Mm-hmm.
It included Stephanie Bridget, my opponent. It included Michael Johnson, the sheriff. And it included Judy Flores, the school of superintendent.
Yeah.
Right? So you had all four of them receiving money from Sierra Pacific and that out-of-county Indian tribe.
Yeah.
And they were all campaigning together. They were doing everything together. They were comrades, if you will.
Yeah.
You had all of them together, and Ms. Darling had been requested to recuse herself. She didn't. That was, a conflict of interest, it sure seemed, but she did not want to do that. She had the opportunity. She went on the Carl Bott Show in this studio right here and said that she could have, but chose not to. It was a personal decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just trust me, right?
And yeah,
this is
trust
what we,
me.
This is what we hear from all the incumbents.
Trust
right?
me.
Just
yeah.
trust me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have that, and what was interesting was that each race had its own flavor. Okay.
Yeah.
In the case of, let's go to the county. Well, let's go to my race. Okay. I ran as a populist. I did not run explicitly as a conservative. I have conservative values, but that wasn't my biggest beef. My focus was on an establishment that had grown out of touch
mm-hmm.
with the concerns of the public. I had people on the left who supported me because they were so frustrated with their constitutional rights being violated.
Surprise, yeah. surprise.
So I had some crossover. All right. And there were many people who were upset with how that office was being run. They don't like government corruption, you know. That's not a funny thing. I mean, there's a lot of people who are upset with their government. So that was the dynamic, and she ran as a rhino. She's a Republican. She's registered Republican. But she's, in truth, a left-of-center feminist. So that was the dynamic in my race.
Mm-hmm.
In the race of Judy Flores versus Brian Caples, you had a guy who was a conservative, wore it on his sleeve, and kind of probably the most Trumpian candidate, I would say, of them all. And you had Judy Flores, who's a registered independent, not a Republican. She's an independent.
But she registered as independent when she ran for the position of superintendent of schools coming from being a Democrat.
Yeah. So, yeah, a little different. So she's going as an independent.
Yeah.
She's not basically an out liberal. None of these people are. Well, actually, that's not true.
No, that's not true.
So we'll get to that. Then you had the race with Michael Johnson and John Green. Now, I found that one interesting because that to me was the Coke versus Pepsi race.
Yes.
Yeah.
people could not make up their mind. I mean, I talk to people all the time, and they were asking me, you know, they were trying to pick my brain on that race. Most of them couldn't distinguish the two. They would get them confused. They would say, hey, you know that standing sheriff there, John Green, I'm really upset with him. And I said, whoa, he is not the sheriff. Right. He is the challenger.
Yeah.
And, you know, people could not figure the two of them out. And guess what? On election day, when we looked at the results directly from the machines, mm-hmm. people couldn't figure them out. It was a fairly tight race. And then you had the most shocking race of them all. You had Bob Holsinger, a guy who was endorsed by the local Republican Central Committee, I think it was, versus a registered Democrat. I would argue an activist. I mean, I know that she, you know, she's got some alliances that with some of the radicals here in our town. She is in favor of Dominion voting machines, unabashed about that. She said that in one of the forums. It's my understanding that she is against voter ID. She's from Washington, D.C. This is not the picture of a person that you would imagine to have such wild success here in Shasta County.
Right.
And yet, all of those candidates, in spite of the different dynamics, all were heavily favored in the early votes. And that, to me, is weird. If one of those candidates was heavily favored in the early votes, you could say, all right, well, you know, that's kind of interesting. But all four of them. And that was in spite of the very different dynamics of the race. So it was politically anomalous and you know, just weird. And like I said, it is also historically anomalous because I compared this data to prior elections.
Right.
And the variance that you see between election day voting and the ultimate outcome in some of the past elections, for instance, if you go back to the 2020 primary, was less than 3%. So what you saw coming out of the tapes on the machines on election day in the June 2020 primary was only was less than 3% different from the subsequently tallied ballots. And in our case, just to recap, the differences between the machines on election day and the subsequently tallied ballots was 16% for Brian Caples, 20% for Bob Holsinger, 16% in my race, and 12% in John Green's race.
Wow.
I mean, it was
so historic. It's double digits all the way around.
Yeah. I mean, and again, unprecedented. If there was a pattern of this happening, you could say, oh, this is how the races unfold. It's natural. And when she and when Kathy Allen gets on the radio, which I find fascinating, quite frankly, because before the election, she was not doing a whole lot of radio appearances and campaigning. Now she's doing a whole host of it. I mean, about how incredibly you know, open and honest and marvelous their operation is, and I believe for the things that we can see, they are. I mean, but it's what we can't see that is most interesting and intriguing and needs to be looked into. But she, you know, had said that there was this red wave, you know, or a red mirage. But I'll tell you another reason that can't be true. Not only does it not bear weight historically, but there was a machine at the ROV's office. In fact, I think this is worth talking about, the three machines at the ROV's office. And when I say ROV, I'm talking about the county clerk's office in downtown Reading.
Yeah.
There was one machine there that I understand to have been used for early votes. Well, people put their votes directly into this machine. Mm-hmm. And that machine produced results that were highly favorable to the establishment and highly favorable to some of the Democrat candidates. So it cannot just be the case that highly conservative people put their ballots directly into the machine on election day. It just doesn't bear weight. Now, let's talk about the three machines. The three machines at the ROV's office on election day, there were two that produced very similar results, but there was a third one that had results that were almost flipped, if you will.
Which machine was it, inside or outside?
We don't know.
Because the two outside, one of which I used and the other one my daughter used, and then they had one on the inside.
Yeah, I understand. I have heard that one on the inside was not accessible to the public, had votes on it, so I don't know. I asked Ms. Allen that question. I said, why were the votes on ICE machine number three so different? I have not received a response.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we will. And, what troubles me.
And a forensic audit will find out.
Well, it would. And look, this is as simple as making sure that we have confidence in the most important system in our republic.
Absolutely.
I mean, if we don't have confidence in the vote, what are we wasting our time doing?
Exactly.
Well, I think we do need to have those 10 steps that Seth talked about. But,
especially,
you know, Eric,
especially number 10.
Yeah, especially
number 10. It'll keep everything else at bay.
It will, yes. And 10 is that there's going to be prison sentences for people who commit fraud in voting.
Well, you know, Terry, let me say just one thing,
sure,
too.
Absolutely.
Because it's so important.
Yes.
Because I, as an attorney, I sent some requests for records to Ms. Allen, and that got processed through the county council. And they were going to delay production of some documents that were really important. In fact, they said that they were going to get back to me on July 11th. Which is one day before she's going to ask the Board of Supervisors to approve the election. Mm-hmm. When the public heard Seth Keschel's speech, and he mentioned how important that data was, there was an uproar in the community, and guess what? She produced those documents.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me that public pressure works. And I think it works more than the legal avenues, quite frankly, at least
Absolutely.
In a short time frame. So we need people who are concerned, who care about this, who are aware of what's going on, to voice their concern to the Board of Supervisors, whether it be via email or to show up in person. And all we're asking for is for answers to questions. That's it.
Right.
We all want to know the truth.
Well, Tuesday on July the 12th, the Board of Supervisors meet at 9 a.m. Kathy Darling Allen was supposed to appear there and wrap things up. However, she's on vacation.
Oh, now she takes vacation.
Yeah, she's not here now. And I know that in some personal conversations with her that we had about certain irregularities during the poll watching and during the observing, some things that were called to her attention, that she was at one point, she did make the comment, well, do you think I need a lawyer? And I said, I don't know, do you? And I think that in a lot of cases, you know, and then it was interesting because she was on vacation at that time. I'd call the office. She was on vacation. She'd never get back to me, but within a couple of hours, she called me from her cell phone from vacation. I don't know where she was, but the point is that, you know, the pressure that we put on and the public pressure we put on and, you know, all the different things, Eric, that you've found out here, all the different things you've gone through as far as, the anomalies. Gosh, we really have to be nice on this program. The anomalies that we're all seeing, I think that's, something we just can't let go of. And I encourage people to give their 3 minutes if they've seen anomalies or they've witnessed something or they have, been observing and they witnessed something, that is, highly irregular. Boy, I'm really being careful this morning. And, that you'd show up at, the Board of Supervisors meeting at 9 a.m. and that you'd go to public comment. Well, we have about 2 minutes left, my friend. So, Eric, you want to bring us home on this?
Well, you know, I would say this. Look, it's important for people to also appreciate that there is no rush. This is an important thing. Our election is super important. I ran on election integrity and ensuring that we had safe and secure elections. It's an important thing. I mean, I also ran on the truth. That's also important to me, right?
Very.
So,
yeah.
Look, there is – nobody's taking office in the next week. These elections were for offices that would be occupied on January 1st. So there is no rush.
Right.
This is a thing where we should be very meticulous and methodical and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There looks to be a lot of smoke billowing out of that county clerk's office.
Yep.
And the fact that we can't show that there's fire is not our fault. It's because we're not being led into the building
right.
to see it. And so we have to keep that in mind. We have to keep putting the pressure on our elected officials. We have to keep putting the pressure and actually informing the rest of the community. Because right now, a lot of people don't know any of this.
Right.
All they saw were the final results, which I would agree. If you looked at the final results, hey, you know, you wouldn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing seems suspicious. But it's when you look closely at the data, there are issues.
Well, and too, when she presents to the Board of Supervisors, you know, that the election is done, signed, sealed, and delivered, she's putting herself on the line.
Yeah.
She's putting her fanny on the line by saying that when an audit can prove otherwise, and if it proves any improprieties on her part and her team's part, then she's, you know, number 10 is going to be assumed to be fully enforced.
Right. And the easy way out for the Board of Supervisors is to say, well, you haven't shown the proof.
Yeah.
Okay. But again, They haven't given us the opportunity to see it.
There you go.
There you go. Well,
so that's where we have to put our focus, is that we just want to look inside of that building so that we can find out where that smoke is coming from.
Absolutely.
Well, folks, we want to thank you. It's been another edition of Jefferson State of Mind. This is archived. Share it. And thank you, Seth, again, out there. I know you're in your car driving around trying to spread the word of liberty. Thank you, Eric Jensen. You're a patriot, my good friend.
Amen.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
It's not our bill. We had no say. You don't serve us. You serve our hate. The time has come.
Regional Medical Center.